I've always been rather impressed by those people who wear badges stating where they stand on certain issues. The badges have to be small, and therefore the message has to be small, concise, and without elaboration. So it comes out as, I hate something, or I love something, or ban this, or ban that. There isn't space for argument, and I therefore envy the badge wearer who's so clear-cut about his or her opinions. I love New York, says the badge. What, all of it? Even the Bowery on a Saturday night, or the garbage, or the ostentatious wealth around Fifth Avenue? I love kids. What, all kids? But I can quite see that a badge saying, I love quite a lot of New York, particularly Central Park, provided the sun hasn't set, and the yellow cabs, but not the subway, and most of the area between Lexington and 8th and Wall Street, but not Harlem. Such a badge might have less appeal, and be illegible, and not be what badges are all about, which is straight, to the point, a slogan, a brushing off of argument, a clarion call, a flag of modern times. The one that confuses me most is nuclear power, no thanks. It has a picture of a bright and happy sun, itself fueled by one form of nuclear power, and then those words. It's a multilingual badge, as I've seen it in German, Dutch, French, and so on, and always has the same grinning nuclear sun. The sun is an extraordinarily peaceful thermonuclear device, destined to give us energy for hundreds of millions more years, just as it has done ever since we on Earth began. And I see nothing but contradiction in that badge. So I also wonder if there isn't contradiction about nuclear power itself, and if we're incapable of thinking about peaceful nuclear power without thinking in the same breath of military nuclear power and what that could do to us. The one is so awful that it spreads across to the other, and I've even seen ban the atom. Its emotion may make sense, but not its cry. Let's go back for a moment to those ancient times, pre-1945, before the word nuclear took on its modern meaning. We shouldn't forget that we were very good at killing ourselves even then, by what are known now as conventional means. In the main, we did the job with explosives, which, like everything else, can be used for military or for peaceful purposes. But I don't think a slogan like ban dynamite would have been any more sensible than ban the atom today. In fact, dynamite has done a very good job in quarries and so forth, and has also done a bad job in blowing people up. I think this particular dilemma of everything from a plank of wood upwards having a peaceful as well as a military capability could be stated most effectively and tellingly if we change the name of the Nobel Prizes. After all, Alfred Nobel made his money out of dynamite, and the Dynamite Peace Prize would hammer home the fact of everything being potentially either good or bad, noble or ignoble, whether planks of wood or dynamite or nuclear energy. When 1945 arrived and the first atomic weapons were detonated, most people heaved a sigh of relief that, whatever the means, the war was over. After all, 50 million people had already died, and what was another 150,000, particularly the enemy, if that meant the end of hostilities? Of course, as we all realized rather less at the time, work on atomic weapons didn't stop just because the war had done so. Even the testing of weapons was putting strontium-90 increasingly into our bones, active cesium into our blood, and active iodine into our thyroids. So if the mere testing in faraway places like Bikini, Novaya Zemlya, Christmas Island, could do all that, step up our chances of leukemia, have our fetuses laden with strontium, then what on earth was a war going to be like? Fallout fell everywhere, a fact we hadn't realized back in 1945, when it fell mainly upon the Japanese. In the meantime, the peaceful uses of atomic energy were also being actively developed. In 1956, Calder Hall was opened, the world's first civil nuclear power station. Just down the road was Windscale, primarily dedicated to the production of fuel for nuclear weapons. But Calder Hall was different, being the friendly side of the atom, the peaceful creation of power from uranium. The Queen came to open it all those 25 years ago. And so far as I can remember, there was not a single protester, not a single banner, and not one badge. It was just 11 years after the war had ended, and not only had nuclear fission brought that war to an end, but here it was in another guise, bringing power for the good of all. As for the dangers, well, we'd been exploding bombs on the continental mainlands, as in Nevada and the Australian desert. So why should we worry about a peaceful power station, something designed to contain its radioactivity and not to scatter it, something whose heat would drive turbines and not scorch up the countryside and everything upon it? So Calder Hall was opened and fed its power into the grid. But weapons testing continued, and fallout fell increasingly, and bombs became bigger, which terrified us, and then smaller, so that they could be fired by the artillery, and that terrified us even more. So did the new intercontinental missiles with their nuclear warheads, and their multi-warheads, which could split up and confound the defensive system. Then there came the Polaris-type devices, which could be launched from the sea bottom and from any place that the nuclear subs could reach. And now there are the cruise missiles, which can make their own way, just above the land, below radar height, and reach their chosen target, or change their minds midway. By and large, we have now learned these facts. We're 36 years into the nuclear age, and we've understood about this new kind of sword hanging above our heads. It is, quite simply, the biggest threat there has ever been. It's the one great nightmare, the ultimate horror, the possible end of everything. Hence, as I see it, the blunting of our distinction between nuclear power and nuclear weaponry. A nuclear weapon is designed to be as destructive as possible. It has no other function. A nuclear power station has been designed with as much skill as possible to provide energy as safely as can be contrived. One has been made to explode, the other cannot explode, however much it may go wrong with a meltdown or whatever. To equate the two is plainly nonsensical. So why is it that they do get equated quite so frequently? I think the answer is that we loathe the bomb so much that we cannot contain our loathing. It spills over into an equally intense distrust of everything that's to do with atomic energy, whether modest packet of isotopes or large power station or bomb. They're all equally tainted in our eyes. They all involve the splitting of the atom and radioactivity. They're all Hiroshima in their way. So to hell with them. We want no part of anything nuclear. On the day when the Queen opened Calder Hall, I wonder what the experts were thinking about the potential safety of this brand new installation. Reactors have been going critical ever since the first did so at Chicago 14 years beforehand as part of the work which led up to the atomic bomb. But such work was still fairly novel. What about the day-in, day-out routine of a nuclear power station? What might go wrong? Would the graphite accumulate energy? Would the control rods fail or buckle? In every human endeavor, there are always unforeseen problems waiting in the wings, such as the metal fatigue that hit the comets. What awfulness was in store at Calder Hall? The following year, such gloomy thoughts bubbled, as it were, to the surface. A reactor at Windscale, busy creating nuclear fuel for a British bomb, overheated and couldn't be damped down before a whole lot of radioactivity had been liberated over the nearby countryside. For weeks, the milk from that locality was poured down the drain. The level of radioactivity in the area rose dramatically. The faulty reactor and its neighbour were closed down, first for investigation, and then indefinitely. Only some filters attached to the Windscale chimneys at the last minute prevented the contamination from being very much worse. And all this happened within a year of that grand and royal opening of Calder Hall, a set of four reactors built along very much the same lines as the two at nearby Windscale. What price, what hope, therefore, for the future of nuclear power? Well, the Windscale accident happened 24 years ago. In a way, it did a lot of good, making designers think again, forcing safety margins to be even stricter. The British nuclear power program may have hiccuped, but it went ahead, and we now have 15 nuclear power stations comprising 32 reactors. We get 12% of our energy from nuclear power, and soon it's going to be 20% when the present lot of building is completed. As for the danger, no member of the British public has been killed in a radiation accident. The world's worst reactor disaster, that of Three Mile Island in Pennsylvania, neither killed nor injured anyone. Nuclear power has a better safety record than power generated from oil or gas, and far better than power from coal. We shouldn't forget, for example, how the pollution in smog has killed people. 750 in London in 1962, 1,000 in London in 1954, 4,000 in London in 1952. Hydroelectricity, water power, is often said to be so safe, but 100 died in the building of Kariba, with many of their bodies still embedded in the concrete of that dam. Okay, so they were workers who had to take that risk. But over 100 large dams have failed in the United States since 1930. They had 355 deaths from dam disaster in the first 5 years of the last decade. In India, more than 3,000 died when a dam broke in 1979, and Italy lost 3,000 in 1963. As for oil, don't forget the tanker which blew up in Bantry Bay not long ago, killing 51, or the North Sea platform which capsized last year to kill 123. That's probably enough figures, more than enough, to make the point that everything is dangerous. From digging coal out of the ground, to sending it by rail, to letting it emit sulfur dioxide into the atmosphere. But we don't seem to care about these conventional accidents, all those dams busting, the dozens of miners killed every year. But we would care like anything, and remember, and be appalled again and again, if the accidents were nuclear. We certainly remember Three Mile Island hurting no one. But what was it that killed those 100 campers in Spain 4 years ago when a road tanker ran into their tents? It was propylene, but who cares, so long as it wasn't nuclear? Of course, there are other issues to nuclear power, such as the proliferation of fissile material suitable for bombs, and the fact that liberated radioactivity doesn't vanish as that propylene did. But proliferation will surely happen anyway, and nuclear power has added very little to the world's natural radioactivity. The main reason for resenting nuclear power, as I see it, is its link with nuclear destruction. They're wildly different, one tamed, one unleashed, but they're still the same animal to most of us. So, let's buy a badge. Nuclear, no thanks. Even if we do make use of its power, and will do so increasingly as the oil and the gas run out. Goodbye.